Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the 8th canto, chapter 20, text number 2. And today's topic, we will discuss the topic of the grihastas, the griha, as it's described here. Does it show it? Oh, it doesn't show anything. Let's see, maybe I'm not pushing hard enough. There we go, the griha medhi nam. Grihamedinams. So this is, can you imagine being a grihastha and having Krishna as your son? I mean, you can see this here, how attractive he is and how wonderful he is. Beautiful. And this is where Krishna comes to display himself. And this is what happened to Bali Maharaj. He saw Krishna and he actually fell in love with him. And all these arguments that we hear about he shouldn't lie and all this stuff. It's just like external, actually, just to kind of pacify the demons. But actually, he fell in love with Krishna. So let's go on. Today's verse. Shri Balir Uvacha. Shri Balir Uvacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmo Yam Grihamedinam Dharmo Yam Grihamedinam Artam Kamam Yasho Ritim Artam Kamam Yasho Ritim Yo Na Badheta Karhichit Yo Na Badheta Karhichit Shri Balir Uvacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam Grihamedinam Artam Kamam Yasovritim Yono Badayeta Karhachit Shri Balir Uvacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam Grihamedinam Artam Kamam Yasovritim Yona Badheta Karhichit Nam Vatin Tatya Hichit Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam Grihamedinam Artam kamam yaso vrittim yona badheta karachit shibaliruvacha satyam bhagavata proktam yamoyam grihamedinam artokamam yaso vrittim yona badheta karachit Shibaliruvacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam Grihamedinam Atam Sambhama Sobhatim Yamname Paharichit Shibaliruvacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam grihamedinam Artam kamam yaso vritim Yona badhe hat karchit Shibalir vacha Satyam bhagavata proktam Dharmoyam grihamedinam Artam kamam yaso vrittim yono bharita karichit. Vaishnavis. Shribalir vacha satyam bhagavata proktam dharmoyam grihamedinam Ato chamam yaso vrittim Vahir Kakarichit Shibalir Vacha Satyam Bhagavata Proktam Dharmoyam Grihamedinam Artam Kamam Yaso Vrittim Yona Bharita Karichit Shibalir vacha Satyam bhagavata proktam Dharmoyam grihamedinam Artam kamam yaso vrittim Natya badatat karchit Okay, so word meanings. Shri Bali Uvacha. Bali Maharaj said, Satyam, it is truth. Bhagavata, by your greatness. Proktam, what has already been spoken. Dharma, a religious principle. Ayam, that is. Grihamedinam, especially for the householders. Artam, economic development. Kamam, sense gratification. Yasaha vritim, reputation and means of livelihood. Ya, which religious principle? Na, not. Bhadheta, hinders. Karhichit, at any time. So translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj said, as you have already stated, the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame, and means of livelihood is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this religious principle is correct. Please repeat. Bali Maharaj said, as you have already stated, the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame and means of livelihood, is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this religious principle is correct. So, purport. Bali Maharaj's grave answer to Sukracharya is meaningful. Sukracharya stressed that one's material means of livelihood and one's material reputation, sense gratification, and economic development must continue properly. To see to this is the first duty of a man who is a householder, especially one who is interested in material affairs. If a religious principle does not affect one's material condition, it is to be accepted. At the present time, in this age of Kali, this idea is extremely prominent. No one is prepared to accept any religious principle if it hampers material prosperity. Sukracharya, being a person of this material world, did not know the principles of a devotee. A devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his full satisfaction. So Srila Prabhupada continues. Anything that hampers such determination should certainly be rejected. This is the principle of bhakti. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22, text 100. To perform devotional service, one must accept only that which is favorable and reject that which is unfavorable. Bali Maharaj had the opportunity to continue or contribute everything he possessed to the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadev. But Sukracharya was putting forward a material argument to hamper this process of devotional service. Under the circumstances, Bali Maharaj decided that such hindrances should certainly be avoided. In other words, he decided immediately to reject the advice of Sukracharya and go on with his duty. Thus, he gave all his possessions to Lord Vamanadev. Om Gyana Tumanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopa Tubhyascha Kripasindubhyascha Patitanam Pavinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So let's the verse again. Bali Maharaj said, as you have already stated, the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame, and means of livelihood is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this religious principle is correct. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that today in this age, this is very rampant. Even religions are based on this aspect. If you're not opulent, if you're not wealthy, then you're considered to be sinful. So you should surrender to the Lord and give your money to the church, and then you become wealthy. So there's many, many great preachers that we've heard on, especially these TV shows. They're very, very wealthy. They had very luxurious homes and lived in great pomp and lavishness. But yet you find out afterwards that they were just rascals and debauchees and so many things like that. So it's not really the qualification, as we can see. So as The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, He comes Himself in so many different forms. Why? Just to attract us back to Him. So the beauty of the Lord is that His devotees are connected to His activities. And so with His activities, He's also glorified. So just like Arjuna, Prahlad Maharaj, Janaka Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, He's in, you know, and we see so many incarnations and many other devotees, and they're not even in the renounced order of life. They're householders. So you can see all the different, many different incarnations of the Lord. And we can see there's Vamanadeva there. Even in this particular chapter, there's Kurmadeva. There's the medical science, what's his name? Dhanvantara. And there's Rishabhdev, Lord Ram, Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is there too. So these are very nice. So these are actually perfect yogis. They're connected with Krishna in these different aspects. Krishna comes to attract him in all these different forms. He's so beautiful that they fall in love with him and they get in contact with him. This is real yogi. That's the perfect yogi, actually. He's always absorbed. He wants to see the Lord, and he becomes fixed. And that way he's performing yoga. The highest form of yoga, bhakti yoga. So here we see, we'll just do like a quick review of what we've learned, some of the lessons in this particular canto. We know the power of Krishna and Krishna's devotees that are connected with him. And we see the great spiritual master here. If you offend a spiritual master, here's Brihaspati, the spiritual master of King Indra. And because of neglect, being too absorbed in his opulences, he just ignored his spiritual master. These are great personalities. You can't just like ignore them. So what happened? I mean, we know the story. He lost everything. And so they had to go and appeal to the Lord, and the Lord appeared to them and said, there's this huge mountain. And this is the mountain. It's completely solid gold. And I think if you guys get together, make a truce with these demigods, then it'll produce this nectar. And then you could become immortal and you could get all these different things. So we can find out, okay, they get together. And what happens? They break all their backs. Practically all of them die. And Krishna has to come himself to lift it up. So Krishna is showing us that He is the one that is actually doing everything. You know, it doesn't matter who you think you are. Krishna is the most powerful personality. And we'll see more how He explains His different aspects. So here's another. So what Krishna does, He picks it up. And He, with one hand, very effortlessly. And what does He do? He puts it on His bird carrier, Garuda. Just puts it on His back. Look at this huge mountain. And then Krishna gets on top too. And then they fly to the ocean of milk to go churn it, which is pretty amazing. So then after that, see, they get together and they churn the ocean. Here we see another incarnation of Krishna is the tortoise incarnation. And they put the whole mountain on his back as a pivot so they can churn that ocean. And here we see the demons on one side and the demigods on the other side. And even Vishnu's on that side too. Vishnu's underneath, he's on top, and he's also pulling. So Krishna is doing everything, practically, you could see. So what did that ocean produce? A poison. And this is what this material world is like, a poison. And there's great personalities that are empowered to relieve us of that poison. And Lord Shiva, he did that, drank up the whole poisonous ocean, and he developed a blue neck. And we can't imitate that. But we may think he's the most supreme, powerful personality, but yet, he was bewildered by Mohini Murti. So Krishna's showing that no matter who you are, I am supreme. I'm the supreme personality. So this is Dhanvantari. Finally, the nectar is produced, and the demons snatch it away. And what happens? Then Krishna comes again and settles the dispute. Here we see the demons are very much interested in material opulence. material sense gratification. Usually it's money and women. And Krishna comes in the form of a woman because he knows that weakness. And who can imagine Krishna coming as a woman? Most beautiful, most attractive. But he was forewarned the demigods that he would do that and to have them control themselves. So the demons fell into the trap. They became so attracted that they let the Mohini Murti incarnation divide up the nectar. And then what happened? We can see that someone tried to cheat, and actually Krishna reveals himself, and he gave all the nectar to the demigods. So all that endeavor for what? You know, they just cheated. So Krishna is a cheater. Here he cheated again. You see, this Krishna is a big cheater. But he cheats for his devotees. He helps his devotees. And then what happened? Another great war happened, and actually the demigods won. And the demons were again deprived. So Bali Maharaj here, he's going to perform a sacrifice known as Vishvajit. And there, from that sacrifice, he received a celestial chariot, yellow horses, bows and arrows, celestial armor. And then what did he get? He actually got a garland from Pallad Maharaj, which is his grandfather. And he got a conch shell from his spiritual master, Sukracharya. So here again, we're seeing the power of the devotee and the power of the brahmanas. So Bala Maharaj, he was blessed. And he was blessed so powerfully, just to show the power of these great personalities. He was so powerful from these blessings from his grandfather and from his spiritual master. And who's his grandfather? Pallad Maharaj. Look at, talk about a surrendered soul. Srila Prabhupada quotes that verse here. Who is more surrendered than Pallad Maharaj? I mean, look, he's under all obstacles, dangers, and he doesn't lose his focus on the holy name. Such a powerful personality. What are those six symptoms of surrender? Accept those things favorable for devotional service and reject unfavorable things. So this is what Bala Maharaj is doing. He's actually surrendering. He's accepting what's favorable, rejecting unfavorable, even if it's your own spiritual master. And he was convinced that Krishna will give him protection. Even though he knew you offend a great personality, look what happened to Indra, that he will be finished. But yet he depended on Krishna. So he accepted the Supreme Lord as his guardian, his master. So this is full surrender and humility. So he humbled himself like that. So because of the power of his blessings, all they had to do in the heavenly planets is look at them, and they were smashed, they were defeated. Lord Indra just looked, and he saw his power and his effulgence, and he could just see, there's no way I could defeat them. So he asked his spiritual master what to do, or he got advice, and he said, you better run. It's better for you to take off now, because now is not your time. So, this is what he's saying. So here, the demigods now are in an opposite position that they were. Again, see, this is the mature world. You're up and down, you win, you lose. You know, you get opulence, you lose it. So it's temporary. So this is the mother of the demigods, Aditi. And she's praying to the Supreme Personality Godhead. She prayed to her husband first, and he told her to perform this Payavrata ceremony. And then the Supreme Lord appeared to her. And she was overwhelmed with bliss and was offering him so many different prayers. He came in his four-armed form originally. And then after that, he appeared in his most beautiful form of Vamanadeva, which is so attractive. And she was just struck with wonder and joy, and they were just amazed. This beautiful dwarf brahmana has come. So we see here now, we're in this chapter, Sukracharya, he's understanding that that's actually Vishnu. So don't surrender to him. You know, you said you promised to give him 3 steps of land, but it's okay. You don't have to give it to him. You didn't say om. You didn't do so many things. It's the first duty of a grihastha to take care of himself first, and then if it doesn't affect, you know, even if the religious principles affect your opulences, you should just give those up. So, anyway, he told him to go back on your promise. And what happened is he actually cursed him. And Sukracharya was inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to curse him. And he cursed him, saying that you will not be able to enjoy anything. You lose everything. See, Bali Maharaj he ruled over the entire universe. And Krishna, again, appeared to help his devotees, to help them regain their position. So this is what he did. He tricked him. Here he comes again as a cheater. He asked for 3 steps of land, and then he expanded his body in this way. We can see. He said, okay, I'll take my first step. And then he takes his first step, and where does it go? Covers the entire universe. You know, the surface of the earth. And his second step, he covered the heavenly planets. And then he was saying, well, what am I going to do with my third step? Because look, Krishna is unlimited. I mean, Vamanadev saw the Supreme Personality. He saw everything in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole entire creation was in him. He saw the skies, the clouds. You know, he saw the directions. He saw the planetary systems. He even saw the various holes in the universe. Saw the seas, the oceans, you know, all the demigods, all the saintly people, everything was in Krishna. So we can see again, Krishna is proving, I am everything. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vamanadeva is seeing this. So now he's saying, okay, I've taken up everything, and you promised to give me 3 paces of land. So where shall I put the third? But here, Bali Maharaj surrendered in humility. He was determined. He wouldn't go on against his promise. So he said, just please put your third step on my head. And that's what he did. And he was blessed. So it doesn't matter. He was a householder. He was a demon. But yet he fell in love with Krishna. And even though Garuda could understand that he was to be arrested, so they tied him up with the rope of the snake. What's his name? Varuna. Vasuki, yeah. Yeah, Varuna's the... Yeah. Well, they're the ropes of Varuna. They belong to Varuna. But, yeah. Anyway, he was fixed in his determination. And he just said, okay, I'm yours. I'm surrendered. And what did he get instead of losing everything? He actually gained everything. I mean, he was cursed by a spiritual master to go to the hellish planets. But yet that hellish planet that he was on was better than the heavenly planets. So whether you're in hell or heaven, Krishna can bless you wherever. Pataloka? It's situated in the hellish area. Sutala. I know, but it's in the hell. It's in the lower regions, in other words. Oh, okay. All right. I think it's a little technical thing there. Could do some analyzing. So here we see that one who is fully surrendered unto Krishna. Here's Prahlada Maharaj again. He's so surrendered and focused to Krishna. He's in the pit of snakes, and yet he doesn't forget Krishna. But look at our lives. Our own senses are like these snakes. They're completely disturbing you, distracting you, and causing you to forget Krishna. The mind, the senses, so many different things. But yet, he was so surrendered that he would only accept things that are favorable for Krishna. What was that? Just focus on Krishna. He rejected everything that wasn't the Lord's service, and he was completely convinced that Krishna would protect him in that situation. firmly convinced. So this is the devotee. And then the devotee accepts him as his supreme master. He doesn't think that I need some demigod or my father to protect me, even though my father's trying to kill me. So he was just firmly convinced that Krishna would protect him. So that's what self-surrender means, remembering that one's activities and desires are not independent. The devotee is completely dependent on Krishna, and he acts and thinks as Krishna desires. And that's takes meekness and humility. Yeah. So we can see here, Lord Chaitanya has come to give this Sankirtan process of becoming absorbed in the age of Kali. How we can actually become fixed on Krishna. And he gave this process, the simple process of simply chanting the holy names of the Lord, the Sankirtan movement of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And bringing Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada is actually came across the ocean and he brought all these incarnations. They protected him on the way and he brought them to us. All the different incarnations, you see there's Kurma, there's even Vamanadeva, I think on the top left there. Top right. And then, this is Prabhupada, he came. He came to where? This Western world where it's an ocean of contamination. The whole planet is contaminated with sinful activities. You know, we're supposed to live in the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is pure water, right? You drink pure water. But here, look at the water of the ocean of Kali. It's so contaminated in so many sinful activities. And Prabhupada came, he's so merciful that he came to deliver us from this great ocean by bringing the boat of ISKCON. This is a special boat, actually. There was a Narahari who was telling me about this boat. He's a captain. He knows about different boats. This is a type of boat. I don't know if the artist knew that, but this is a type of boat. I forget what you call it, but it's only goes in one direction. It doesn't go. It's just made to go in one direction. And this is what we're made to go in, just one direction. Back home. Back to Godhead. So this is the mercy of the pure devotees. They're in contact with Krishna, so they bring Krishna to us. And Prabhupada comes. We talked about the grihasthas, that the man and the woman, they should live together as householders in what relationship with Krishna? Only for the purpose of discharging duties to please Krishna. You engage the children, engage the wife, engage the husband, all Krishna conscious activities. Whether they're bodily, mentally, whatever, you do it for Krishna. And then all these disturbances from the snakes of the senses and the material desires, they actually disappear. They're gone. Since Krishna is the divine medium, he's pure, so there's no possibility. If you keep yourself associated with the pure, you're not going to get contaminated at any time. So by doing that, the devotees aren't losers. They're pleasing everyone. The demigods, Krishna, they supply everything. Just by this jagya, performing this sacrifice. They did that. And this is the beauty of the Lord and his devotees. They're connected with him. And they're glorified because they're in connection with Krishna. Like Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj. Even though they're born in demoniac families, still, because of their association with the Lord, they're glorified with the Lord. So that's a conclusion. The perfect yogi should just be accustomed to seeing the Lord and just practice and practice and focus until we're fixed in that way. And then here we see there's a great grihastha when Maharaj Nabi, he departed, renounced, he gave the kingdom to his son Rishabhdev. And Rishabhdev was himself first a brahmachari, then he became a grihastha. And he lived according to the rules of a householder, and he taught his sons how to do the same thing. He was given a wife by Indra, And then he produced 100 sons. So he showed how to be an exemplary householder. So this is very important, how Krishna comes for two reasons. To liberate his devotees and to stop those demoniac activities of the non-devotees. So this is one of the demoniac activities, to try to enjoy this material world as much as we can. Take over the universe so that I can enjoy it to the best of my ability. So Krishna came as Vamanadev, you know, to take this away and show. Even though you may be a highly elevated priest, he will take it away and show you this is not proper. So he gave a very nice example, Rishabhdev, for us to follow. So he remained ideal. And then we have another great personality, Narada Muni. He wasn't a householder, but he came in contact with many householders. And we know one, Daksha. So according to Daksha, he said that, you know, actually you're right, material unhappiness or material enjoyment is the cause of unhappiness. But you can't give it up unless you personally experienced how much suffering it is. So this was his philosophy. So he said, you should just allow my sons to remain in sense gratification, household life, and that way they can experience the miseries of this false material happiness, and then they'll give it up. But this is not actually what happens. Prabhupada uses the analogy of a woman. It said that unless a woman becomes pregnant, she can't understand the trouble and the pain of childbirth. And it's like saying, okay, the woman, once she has a child, it's going to be so painful that she's going to not do it again. She'll give it up. But I know from my mother, I asked her, what is it like to give a child? And she said, you know, it's the most painful thing that you experience. But yet, it's the easiest thing to forget. And she had 11 children. So that's proof. So by experiencing the miseries of the material world, you're not going to give up sense gratification, even though sense gratification is the cause of misery. So what can you do? What to do? So he was very upset with Narada Muni, and he cursed him. You know, Narada Muni was there listening to Prajapati Daksha, and he was listening how Daksha was trying to bring up the impression that I'm more tolerant than you. You liberated my first sons. You know, they became devotees. I wanted them to become householders, and I didn't say anything. But now you're doing it again. So I'm just going to show that you're not a saintly person, because you don't realize what's necessary if we have to enjoy and all these things. So anyway, he tries to curse Narada Muni that you will not be able to stay in one place and enjoy. And then actually he thought it was a great punishment, because the grihasta, he likes to stay in his pad, and you know, this is cool, and you know, you have all your facilities. But yet he cursed him. But Narada Muni realized that, yeah, this is a great blessing. Thank you for the curse. It's okay. So now we see Prabhupada. He says in the Parampara system of Narada Muni, I've also been cursed, because I have so many nice centers and they're very comfortable, but I can't stay in one place for very long, more than a few days. So he says he's been cursed by his disciples' parents that way. So therefore he has to travel all over the world, you know, like three times a year. Actually, it's been like he went all over the world like two or three times a year. And, you know, he was saying that even though I have so many comfortable places, wherever I go, I can't stay there. But he said he doesn't mind this curse. This is nice. But he said, now I'm hoping that my disciples, my young disciples, they'll take sannyas, and then they'll take charge of traveling all over the world. So I'll transfer this curse to them. So that I can sit down conveniently, you know, in one place and translate. And this is what he gave us, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're very fortunate Srila Prabhupada was able to do that. And Prabhupada is able to give us that blessing, you know, the tolerance, even though you may be cursed. He teaches about Karunika, that the symptoms of a sadhu are that he's tolerant, he's merciful, and he's friendly to all living entities. He doesn't have any enemies. He's peaceful, he abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. So this is a devotee. So Narada Muni, he's the most elevated sadhu, and he wanted to deliver Daksha, who was a householder. And this was his mercy. And Srila Prabhupada came, himself was a householder, and he gave it up to give us this transcendental message of the Supreme. And we see Lord Chaitanya, he taught his devotees, and here we see Haridas Thakur. This is the deity of Haridas that we saw this last weekend. So he taught his disciples what? Tunarapi sunichena, turorapi sahishnana, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. That we should chant the holy name in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In that state of mind, we can constantly chant the names of the Lord. So, following the orders of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one who preaches the glories all over the universe or all over the world, they have to be humbler than grass. They have to be tolerant. And preachers, Srila Prabhupada said, should not live an easygoing life. Actually, you have to face many impediments when you travel. Sometimes you're cursed, as Narada Muni was, as Srila Prabhupada feels that he was. And even sometimes you might experience bodily injury. Nityananda Prabhu was out preaching and he got hit in the head, even made him bleed, and he tolerated those rogues. So that's the duty of a preacher. Even Lord Jesus Christ, he was crucified. So Narada Muni didn't think his curse was very astonishing, and he tolerated it, and he was very humble. So here we see an example of a preacher that we were able to chant with this during the new year, bring it in the new year. And he was telling how when he first started, you know, he thought he wanted to be like the best kirtan, you know, mridanga player and everything. And Iyengar would just completely always smash him and humble him and say, you're not good. This and that. Just made him, really humbled him. And when he finally surrendered, he realized that he actually can focus. And he was trying to learn, right? There was one example where talking about focus, and he mentioned yesterday in class of how just simple words, just speaking silent, being silent, like Bali Maharaj was silent, he deliberated, and then he just spoke very powerful words. As we'll see the next 13 verses, that they explain his words. So he was learning how to play, learning the mantras to play the drum. And it was kind of interfering with his kirtan, so the teacher, for teaching him the mantras of the drums, he said that you have to stop this bhajan with Indra because it's kind of messing up the learning and stuff like that. So he went to Indra and he said that, you know, he wants me to stop so I could learn these mantras. And Indra looked at him real heavy. Just looked at him in the eye and he said, do you want to die learning or do you want to die in kirtan? But so he just knew. So he quit. So he doesn't know the mantras to the... He knows a few, but, you know, it's basically, it's from the heart. And that's what he was taught, and that's why he's can chant so nicely like that. And we see the devotees. That's what we're trying to do, is really focus. That's what he was taught, to focus. And like when he first started chanting, he said, okay, so we're going to chant, and we're just going to let it go in one ear and go out the next, right? And everybody's, yeah. So, okay, I'm going to ask you again. Are we going to chant and just let it go in one ear and go out this? And then people realize, yeah, actually, we have to really focus and bring it into the heart and chant very deeply. And you can see that some of the devotees like that, we can see. I took a lot of pictures, and some of the devotees are really absorbed. But I didn't show the other pictures because you know, might be embarrassed because devotees are looking around and, you know, talking and doing things still even. So we have to really just focus. You know, when we chant, when we read, when we hear, it's very important that we just become so absorbed that we're experiencing the holy name. We're getting in touch with Krishna. And this is a process. We have to, once you get that, then you get a taste. You can actually relish. And this is what a spiritual master is supposed to give you, right? He's supposed to give you a taste, a relish of the holy names. And this is what happened. The spiritual master, he comes. And what does he do? He chants the holy name. He dances in ecstasy. He's singing and playing musical instruments. The spiritual master is always gladdened by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because he is relishing the mallows of pure devotion within his mind, sometimes his hair stands on end. He feels quiver in his body and tears flow from his eyes like waves. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. Was Sukracharya doing that? Giving him relish? He's like, Chaitanya, no, relish material things. You know, the Supreme Lord is so beautiful. He's right there in front of you, and he's like not even seeing him. But because he got blessed by his Prahlad Maharaj, who was fully surrendered, he was able to recognize the Lord, and he completely fell in love with him. So here's another prayer from that same song that describes relishment. Anybody remember from the Guvastikam? The spiritual master is always eager to hear and chant about the unlimited conjugal pastimes of Radhika and Madhava and their qualities, names, and forms. The spiritual master aspires to relish these at every moment. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. So eventually we relish and relish that taste, and eventually we'll be invited to come into the pastimes of Krishna. And that's what Srila Prabhupada came to reveal to us through these windows into the spiritual world, through these transcendental literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is non-different than Krishna. He's given us the holy names, which is Krishna, the power of Krishna. And then we can actually become engaged in relishing the association of Krishna. So this is the Param Via Jayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So it's very glorious, this holy name. It cleanses the dust, this dirt that has accumulated for so many years. It extinguishes that fire of conditional life of repeated birth and death. So this Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It's a life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the transcendental ocean of bliss, and it enables one to taste the nectar for which we're always anxious. Yeah, so thank you very much. Any comments, realizations, questions? It's late, I'm sorry. But thank you for your kind attention. Oh, do you? Maybe one question? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai. Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.